Let's bring you to 2006 to 2025, the Washington Nationals TV play-by-play. 42 years complete of Major League Baseball play-by-play. So the Washington Nationals and your career there. Should we talk about the World Series in 2019?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Let me tell you how I got that job real quick, because I was not looking for that job. The Expos left Montreal after the 2004 season. It was already known they were leaving to go to Washington. The first year, I was still working for the Cardinals. I was in the second year of a three-year deal with the Cardinals, but I wasn't doing that many games. Everything was going to cable, and I was down to about 45 or 50 games a year with the Cardinals. So I did that in 04 and 05. Well, in, I think it was February of 06, I'm having dinner with my ESPN crew in Stillwater. We're doing an OSU basketball game the next night. My phone lights up, and it's my agent, Alan Sanders, who's from New York, calling me, and he said, hey, how would you feel about doing baseball in Washington, D.C.? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I've never thought about it. I had been there for soccer, been there for some college basketball games, and I had been there the previous year for a weekend with the Cardinals. They played the Nationals in 05, their first year, but I wasn't there. He said, well, he said, they want to fly you up to Baltimore, where the network is headquartered, for an interview next week. Are you open? I gave him a couple days when I could go. He said, okay, I'll call them and I'll call you back. Long story short, the next week, they flew me up to Baltimore to the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, which was headquartered in the warehouse at the Baltimore Orioles ballpark, Camden Yards up there. I met with their guy. The car that picked me from the airport drove me an hour down to D.C. to go to their ballpark to meet with Tony Taveras, the president of the team, and his assistant, Kevin Ulich. I think I met with them for about 2 hours. And Tony Taveras raked me over the coals for like an hour and a half in this job interview. He was a tough guy. He's like, now, Bob, tell me when you really think you nailed it on a, you know, a call of a game, a home run call, whatever. So I'm pretty proud of a couple of things I did. I'm giving him. And then he looked at me and said, now, when did you really just totally screw it up? Tell me about those. I was not prepared for that. I did recall a play that I had done years ago on NBC. I did one game for NBC, and there was a play at third base. I thought it was a double play. The umpire called the runner safe. Then they got the guy at first. So I called it a double play, and then it wasn't. And then they appealed, and the umpires changed their mind and called him out. So I eventually was right. But I said, Tony, I got caught in no man's land, and I didn't do a very good job. He goes, you know what? That's a really good, honest answer from you. I like that. He said, I think we're going to work well together. So then the car takes me back up to Baltimore, and I had dinner that night with the main guy from the network who had just flown in from being out of town. Had dinner with him, spent the night, flew home the next day. And on March 1st, I was in St. Louis. I had just done a promotional video for the Cardinals, and I got on the plane. I was flying to Vegas to give a motivational talk to a company that had hired me to go out there and speak for a couple of hours. While we were waiting to taxi away from the gate, my phone lights up and my agent, Alan, says, hey, he says, hey, the Nationals want to hire you. I'm working out the details. You're going to have to be at spring training in 2 weeks, and you're going to have to be in D.C. in 4 weeks. This is March 1st. So I said, okay, my gosh, okay. You know, I didn't even have time to call Deb until I got to Vegas because they were closing the door. So the plane takes off. I strike up a conversation with the lady next to me. She lives in Washington, D.C. I'm like, okay, God, can we have any more symmetry here than what's going on? And so that's how I got the job in D.C. 2 weeks later, I was down in Vieira, Florida for spring training. And a month later, we were opening the season in New York against the Mets. Opening day was a week after that at home. I met Vice President Cheney. He came out to throw out the first pitch. Off and running, I went with the Washington Nationals, probably the last place I ever expected to do a baseball game, and I ended up doing 20 years of games there.
Who were some of the players then that first year you were with the Nationals?
Well, we had a young Ryan Zimmerman who played his entire 16-year career with us. I'm trying to think of fans in our area. That was not a real well-known team. A bunch of them were Montreal guys. The catcher, the team captain, was Brian Schneider. Second baseman was Jose Vidro. One of the pitchers was Levon Hernandez, who had won a World Series with the Florida Marlins, I think back in 03. So that was 3 years before that. And not a real team. Vinny Castillo was on that team. No, he was the year before. But those were the main guys on that team. And it was a young team trying to sort of build early in their career. And, John, I had six really bad years with the team in D.C. We had a losing record every year. But our record was so bad in two of those years, we got the number one draft pick. And with the first one, we took Steven Strasburg, who would be on his way to the Hall of Fame had he not gotten hurt. And the second one was Bryce Harper, who will go to the Hall of Fame, even though he's a member of the hated Philadelphia Phillies right now. He was with us for 7 years. Then we had eight good years. We didn't have a losing record in 2011, but we were 81-81. The next 7 years, we were one of the winningest teams in baseball, culminating in the World Series win in 2019. And then my last 6 years, guess what? Pretty bad. So I had six bad years, eight really good years, six bad years. And I got to tell you, as an announcer, when you're there every day, the losing wears on you. I think I did some of my, I probably did better work in those 12 bad years to keep our fans engaged than maybe I did during those eight good years. But that's the job of a play-by-play announcer. You have to find a way to keep the fans engaged, to keep them involved, and to keep them, most importantly, tuned in when everything's hitting the fan.
And the attendance went way down, I would imagine.
Yeah, it did. And then, you know, during those really good years, we made the playoffs in 12, got our hearts broken by the Cardinals in the playoffs, 14 beaten by the Giants, 15, I think it was the Dodgers, 17, it was the Cubs. Finally, in 19, we won our division those first four times, and every time we got knocked out in the first round. In 19, we go in as the wild card. Our team was 19-31 to start the season. They played unbelievable baseball for the next 4 months, got in the playoffs, beat Milwaukee. We were the underdog. Let's see, who'd we beat now? We beat the Dodgers. One game five in L.A., extra innings. We were the underdog. We swept the Cardinals in four. We were the underdog. We beat the Astros in the World Series in seven games, winning in Houston, and we were the underdog in that. So we beat the Dodgers on the road and the Astros on the road in winner-take-all games to win that thing. And I can't believe I didn't remember to bring you my big old ring to show you that I got for that season. It's about the size of the windsock you have on this microphone here.
Right. You never wear it, do you?
I'm kind of afraid to. Yeah. If I ever got in a fist fight, I'd really like to have it on my right hand, but I'm kind of afraid to wear it in public.
When you were doing play by play, did you have a feel of freedom to be critical of the team? How did you handle that?
Great question. I think as long as you don't make it personal, you know, hey, so and so's having a rough day at shortstop. You listen to talk radio, I'm sure, a lot because you did it for so long. Some of these guys on sports talk radio, they think they should be managing the team. They think they should be batting cleanup. And they think they should be starting every fifth day or be the closer coming out of the bullpen getting 50 saves. It doesn't work that way. And people on talk radio can get real personal about players. Oh, this guy, he just stinks over the last couple of weeks. This guy's lost. He's having a nightmare. I worked for the network, not technically for the team, but I can say one thing. In 20 years with the Nationals, nobody ever told me what to say or what not to say. And that's big because that makes you feel like you have the trust of the people you're working for. Only one time in St. Louis did we get admonished for something we said. And it really wasn't something we said. Cardinals were having a rough stretch. And whoever we were playing that night got like four or five runs in the eighth inning. And it was a one-sided game. And our director cut to the crowd and people were leaving the ballpark. And I don't even remember what I said. I might have said, we got some unhappy fans and evidently they've seen enough. You know, not terrible, not mean. The team president called our producer the next day and said, don't ever show people leaving the ballpark again. Yeah. I kind of get it, you know. Now, in New York, they would say, hey, screw you, I'm going to show what I want. But, you know, St. Louis is a different kind of place. St. Louis is a real feel-good baseball place. That's the only time I think I've ever been on a crew where we were told, don't show something or don't say something. Other than, you know, it used to get a little outrageous. During summer games, guys used to show the women in the bleachers and their halter tops and their skimpy outfits and all that. That kind of thing, you know, went away probably 20 years ago because it's just not the prudent thing to do anymore. Right. And, you know, it's not a boys' locker room frat house thing you're doing on the air. There were days when it was kind of like that, but those days are way, way gone. But I think, John, back to your point, there's a way to point out that a player's having a rough game, and then it's up to the analyst to say why he's having a tough game. Maybe he's just not seeing the ball. He's not seeing the rotation on the slider or the curveball or whatever. You know, his bat's a little slow. He's played 20 days in a row. He's just not catching up with the fastball. There are ways to do that without personally criticizing the player. And I got to tell you this story because this, when I heard this from Ozzie Smith in 1997, it became the mantra for the rest of my career. Ozzie had just retired. The Cardinals hired him to work the home games with me on TV in St. Louis, about 50 games a year. And I loved Ozzie. He was a great guy. I knew him as a player. We became good friends. And all of a sudden, I'm working with this guy. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's never broadcast a game before. So he's really leaning on me and everything. So it's opening night. We're playing the Montreal Expos. And his best friend, Willie McGee, hits a home run in the bottom of the ninth to win the game. And we walk off the Expos. Stadium's going crazy. You know, we do our wrap-up. Hey, great game tonight, fans. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Whatever we said when we signed off. And, you know, broadcasters have little things between us that the people don't see at home. Because when that ball, and Ozzie was kind of going crazy when Willie hit that homer, it was his best friend. Ozzie knew it was a homer before I did, but then I put my call on it, and Ozzie and I looked at each other and kind of went, you know, we did kind of a wow without saying it. And so the whole thing's over. Everything's kind of died down. We take our headsets off. And I said, well, Ozzie, what do you think of this broadcasting stuff? And he said something, John, that I will never forget. He said, partner, the game sure looks easy from up here.
Yeah.
And this is from a guy who won 13 gold gloves and made playing shortstop look as easy as anybody who ever stepped on a baseball field.
Yep.
And for Ozzie Smith to say that, we've had meetings with the players. We used to have a meeting at spring training every year before the player, before a game. And the ball club would let us talk to the players, and all the minor league guys were there. There might be 70 players in that clubhouse. And I would get up every year and tell the Nationals guys that story and say, I just want you all to know that I appreciate the fact that you've made it to the highest level of your sport. Just to get here, you have to be amazing. To be a star here, you have to be unbelievably talented and amazing and hardworking. And I just want you guys to know we got your back when things aren't going well. You know, I see the players, they're nodding at me because I said, I know that your mom's listening. I know your dad's watching. Your girlfriend, your wife, who, you know, your sisters, your brothers, your aunts, your uncles, your grandparents. I said, we will never do anything on the air to embarrass you because we respect you making it to this level. So about 3 or 4 years into this thing, we had this pitcher, Drew Storen, who was a real wise guy. His dad was a radio guy who kind of did what you did. And Drew thought he was kind of a broadcaster himself or would be someday. And he used to imitate me and make fun of me and stuff. It was all in fun. So one year I got up there and I said, hey guys, it's really great to see you. And there's just one thing I want to tell you about the coming season. And Drew Storen announces to the clubhouse, here comes the Ozzie Smith story again. And we had a great laugh about it. You know, but John, I think you have to have the respect for those players. If you respect those players, I think you'll get it in return because they know you will never hang them out to dry and you'll have their back. And I've had numerous guys and their families come up to me and say, hey, a couple of weeks ago when my guy was really struggling, You know, a dad will come up and put his arm around me. He'll say, hey, we really appreciate the way you handled that thing. And now he's out of it. He's doing his thing. And we just want you to know how much that means to the family. And my heart just skips a beat when I hear something like that.
You know, you humanize them. And often we look upon them as robots. Mm-hmm. But you made them human beings. And we need to hear more of that, as a matter of fact, I think.
When Mark McGwire got traded to the Cardinals in 97. We traded three young players to the Oakland A's to get him. We were on the road when that happened. Mark actually joined the team in Philadelphia. And then I think the next night we flew back to St. Louis to open up a homestand. And I knew one of those young pitchers really well that we traded. His name was TJ Matthews. His dad, Nelson Matthews, pitched in the major leagues. Pitched for the Cardinals decades before that. He was from the other side of the river over in Illinois, not far from where my family was from. And I told our Cardinal fans, I said, on the air, I said this. I said, you know, we're all excited about Mark McGwire. We can't wait for him to be here. But I said, there's three other young men we need to be thinking about tonight. I know at least one of them had a dream as a little boy to pitch for the St. Louis Cardinals. And now he's being sent to the Oakland A's. I didn't think a whole lot of it. But I thought I should say something, especially for TJ, who was just a great young guy, and I really got to know his family. We get to the ballpark the next night. We do the game. I'm in the lobby after the game, right where I used to stand as a 14-year-old watching those players come out. This beautiful young woman comes running up to me and throws her arms around my neck and says, Bob, I'm TJ's girlfriend. You have no idea what that meant to me and to our family and our families when you said that the other night. She said, I just want you to, she was bawling her eyes out, and I'm trying to keep control. But that taught me, John, that you respect them, and you remember they have families behind them who are living and dying with everything they do on that field, too.
Yep.